Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, where ordinary heroes tell extraordinary stories during unique and never been heard before conversations with your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Hillary's unique listening and way of asking questions results in conversations that aren't usually talked about, so you can create the life that you really want but are afraid you can't really have. We are demonstrating the greatness in the human spirit and creating a world where we all reclaim our birthright of joy, happiness, purpose, and passion. Now, here's your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, and today we have Maria Zaharieva, and I'm not sure if I'm saying that, so she's going to correct me as soon as she comes on. I've known Maria for a while. She is an amazing, inspiring woman, and I'm going to let her tell you about it because she has an incredible story. So welcome, Maria.
Thank you so much, Hillary. I'm honored to be here. Thank you. Thank you for your invitation.
You're welcome. So I know you've had an interesting life. I know you're in Sweden now, but where were you born? What country?
So my name is Maria Zaharieva. It comes from my grandfather, who was selling sugar in Istanbul, in Turkey. So we are the family of the people who are selling sugar in Istanbul. That's where my name comes from. I am originally from Bulgaria, and I've been living in Sweden for the past 23 years.
Okay, so your grandfather was selling sugar in Istanbul, but you were born in Bulgaria?
I'm born in Bulgaria, in Sofia. Okay. Yes.
But that's where your name is.
Yes.
So your name means selling sugar in Istanbul? Wow.
I know. That's amazing. And I come from Balkan, so like in Balkan, like that kind of peninsula in Europe, everybody has been part of everybody else's country at some point. So we have very kind of, the culture is almost the same. So for me, Istanbul is like home.
Okay. All right, good. So were you an only child? Were your parents together? Tell us a little bit about your childhood.
I am not an only child, which was very special for a socialist country like Bulgaria at that time. I have two brothers. That was very unusual. My father and my mother are still alive, thank God. But they're separated, and I love them both. Yes.
And what? They're separated and what?
They're separated, and I love them both.
Okay, like, all right. I thought you said, and I'm not involved. I was like, okay.
No. I'm trying to be involved in between them.
Yes. And how long, I mean, have they just gotten separated, or was like...
It was 10 years ago.
Okay. So when you were growing up, they were together.
Yes, they were.
And what number of child are you?
I'm the first one. So I'm the pioneer in the family. I was leading the family towards different things and experiences.
All right, cool. So what was your childhood like? Were you like regular? Did you go to school there? What was Bulgaria like?
It was amazing. Bulgaria was a socialist country at that time, and a lot of people don't know what that means. We were almost like the Soviet Union, but not really. So kind of the space in Bulgaria was very open, and we could try many different things. So I have won hundreds of different championships from, being in the artistic gymnastics group to being a makeup artist to make like the best clown in the school. I've done everything. I've recited poems. I could play guitar. I knew four languages by the time I was 12. I've read all the classics. I've seen all the classical movies, and that was normal for me in Bulgaria. I know six languages. I understand 10. I've done movies myself. I've been a journalist. I've had 15 professions probably, and kind of that's, for me, that's normal. And the idea was that, you know, as the people in the during the Renaissance, if you have a talent, then it's kind of your job to develop it and to do something with it. So I grew up in a family. My mom, it's definitely her fault, but like my mom was inspiring us to become the best we can be and the biggest people we can be. So like for me, doing many different things is normal. So I'm very good in, American jazz, and I'm very good in the Thailand history. And as I said, like I've done many different things, and that's normal.
So are you a musician, or do you mean listening to jazz?
Listening to jazz. I
Okay.
played classical guitar when I was growing up, and I miss it a bit because I don't do that anymore.
Oh.
I've danced, like I've won many dance competitions. It's like that was normal for me. That's normal.
What kind of dance? What kind of dance?
Michael Jackson imitations for the most part. I know, and I loved it. Billie Jean is maybe one of my favorite songs. So.
Can we see? Can we see? Billie
Oh
Jean.
my God, that
Wow.
was
All right. I want to see that when we're done. Come
long
on. Let's put a recording on the show so everyone can see it. Do you have any recordings?
Oh my God, no! But maybe next time.
Yeah,
But
maybe next time.
no.
All right, cool. All right, I'm now thinking about your day. Okay, come back. Come back. All right. So you grew up doing all those things by the time you were 12, right? But then what did you do like when you went to college? How did you narrow it down if you had so many things you were great at?
Well, that was the biggest problem because I was good at everything I ever done. So for me, actually choosing a certain path was a very hard thing to do, and I was confused for like bigger part of my teenage years. And kind of that was the hardest age I've ever experienced. And at some point around 12, 13, I got really depressed. And I was trying to be part of all the groups as a teenager. That's what you try to do, like kind of pass, being part of something, and it never worked out. I never felt at home, and I felt really isolated and very lonely, and I was sure that nobody's gonna see who I am, love me as I am. And it was absurd because on the on the surface, everybody loved me, and I had like the best grades in school. Everybody knew who I was, and I was doing all these like very exciting things. But deep inside, I felt really, really not myself, and kind of I was trying to get approval from everybody and everything. And kind of at some point, I got a feeling that I lost who I was, and I totally kind of almost like forgot who I was and what was important to me. And as a child, I was very alive and very, everything could inspire me. Kind of, I got back to that. But when I was growing up in during like my those years, I felt really lost. I didn't know who I was. I didn't know. And kind of, I was repeating to myself, "Nobody's gonna love me as as me." It was horrible. The experience of actually not knowing who I was, the experience of not being close to myself and not being able to be myself. That had huge impact on like my self-expression and who I became in the world. And by the time I was 19, I wanted to commit suicide. It's like it was so bad. I didn't see any light at the end of the tunnel. I didn't think I had any worthwhile thing like to provide or to give or to contribute with. And I said like I didn't like myself very much. I didn't know who I was. So there was like there was nothing. That was nothing. It was like just darkness. So,
So how did you go? And I don't know if you have an answer, but to me, like the beginning, you're like, I know six languages, guitar, gymnastics, classics, the best makeup, won all these championships, journal, everything. And now, and then all of a sudden it became dark and you didn't know who you are. Like, how was it because you were doing those things to get approval and it wasn't really you? Like, what do you think?
It was both,
Seems
like
like it's such a dichotomy,
yes, and it took a while. It's not like it happened from one day to the next one. It like the I really wanted people to approve of me. I was the girl. I was the first girl in the family. When I was 7, my parents presented me to their friends, like, "Oh, this is our daughter, Maria. She's very responsible. She's like a grown up." I was 7, so I decided that to be loved, seen, accepted, and acknowledged, I need to be like a grown up. It's like you need to be in a certain way and you can't be a child. And I took that on very early. As I said, I was 7, and I didn't know the impact of that decision, and I didn't know what was going to happen. But I was far too much out there. I wanted everybody to like me. I wanted everybody to love me. And when you try to do that, you lose yourself on the way. You can't like it's yeah.
Yeah, you be who you think you have to be to have them like you. Yeah, I got that one.
Exactly. Or like exactly. So like it's all my relationships at that times. Like I was trying to be who I thought those people expected me to be,
Right.
but I never liked myself. So who do I
Wow.
want to be? And that had huge impact.
So, okay. So 19. So, okay. So you had some good years where you were people pleasing and getting awards, right? And then all of a sudden you're like, who the heck am I? And then by 19, you want to commit suicide and there's darkness. Okay. All right. So now what? How did you get through that? Because I'm sure there's some people who are there right now and could learn a little bit of how, because I don't think you're that way right now. So how did you get out of that?
I'm exactly on the other side.
Yeah.
What happened was I started studying psychology because I thought if I become psychologist, maybe I'll be able to solve my problems. I think a lot of psychologists become psychologists because they think that will solve their problems. It
Right.
didn't. But also realized that in psychology and psychiatry, you need to put people in boxes, all those diagnoses, and sometimes it's really helpful. But for me, it wasn't because I realized that I already had put myself in a box, actually in a few boxes, like the Russian dolls principle. So it wasn't the box problem, it was something else. And I started doing a lot of self-growth work. I did a course in that time, which very few Bulgarians have done, but I've done it. And it's called Insight Seminars. And it was ground by John Roger, who started with Werner Erhard at the same time, doing the same things in the 60s and in 70s. And he created Insight Seminars. And it was a great experience for me. Insight looks a lot about feelings, especially guilt and resentment. And a lot of people have problems with that. I had problems with that. Like I felt guilty all the time. I just didn't know because I was so used to it. And also like judgments, self-judgment, like we are judging ourselves all the time. I didn't know that like I was a masterful self-judgment. And that course kind of opened up the door to towards starting feeling there is a hope for me. The course was 5 days. I don't remember anything from the course. The only thing I remember is that when the course ended and the doors kind of closed behind me, I was thinking maybe there is hope for me too. And I was crying on the way home because I was so moved. I still get moved, but it was like for me, it was like, oh, maybe there is hope for me too. And it was hard going back to myself. I can't lie, but it's like, I was crying practically every day for 6 years. I was listening to all the Requiems, the Mozart, like I had all the Requiems at home because kind of that put me in the right space, because I got so present to how many times I've betrayed myself, how many times I wasn't true to what was right for me. How many times I didn't stood up for what worked for me. I didn't know what worked for me, what I wanted.
So,
And I
Maria,
can't.
which 6 years were you crying from 12 to 19, or after you did the seminar?
1925.
Wow.
And I did a lot of forgiveness work. I was like I kind of made it a thing to forgive myself every day. And it took a while because in the beginning I couldn't even see when did I judge myself because I was judging myself all the time. So I had to start teaching myself. Oh, I'm judging myself now. Oh, I'm judging myself now. So it was a process.
And what
Yes.
was the guilt from? Like, why did you feel so guilty? What did you think you did?
Well, my culture is a traditional macho culture. It's like I was the biggest, the big, like the oldest kid, but also the daughter, so like the big sister. So everything that made my brothers, for example, cry or being sad, it was on me. And when I was small, I couldn't actually say, no, it wasn't my fault. Like my brother, for example, he knew that when our parents come home, if he's crying, they would think that I've done something, so they would buy something, like they would give him some sweets, and I would be punished. So I had no way to tell to my parents that my brother saw them from the street. They started crying without me doing anything. How was I going to explain? I was 7. So like I grew up with everything was my fault. Like, if there was anybody who was upset around me, it was my fault. And it took a while for me to understand, like, oh, it wasn't. They were upset because they were upset, or like they were doing whatever they were doing. It wasn't my fault. And it took a while.
And did they say it was your fault, or was that just something that you took on? They
Oh,
did? They said it
they did.
was your fault.
Of course. You should know better. You're the
Oh gosh.
big
Okay.
sister.
I can relate to
Yep.
that. You should know better. Yes. Okay, good. Wow. All right. So go ahead. So you cried from 19 to 25 every day. Wow. And then what?
But like I started meeting people who have done like a lot of spiritual inner work themselves, who kind of took me under their wings, and I'm incredibly grateful for them. And kind of they usually say that you need one grown-up to start believing in you, for you as a kid to actually start believing in yourself. Kind of that was my experience. I met a couple of those people, and they really saw me in a totally new way. They saw the light in me, which I didn't see at that time. And they spoke to that. They spoke to that light. They spoke to, my bigger me, or like whatever was good in me, which I wasn't even aware there was. Like I definitely didn't see it, but I got it. I didn't even feel it. It was like, like me, so who was so fractioned, and like I didn't even know who I was. You mean I have light inside of me? And I remember like the first person who told me, you can be somebody who even the United Nations can listen to if you go there and speak. And I'm like, what do you mean? Like me? Who are you talking to? And it's like it took a long time to start seeing, like, oh, yes, there is darkness in me, but there is also light. And to start actually investing into the light part of me. Because I had invested so much into the darkness, and like I'm this person, I'm like I'm faulty, I'm like I'm supposed to be feeling guilt all the time. And I started actually to invest in the light part of me. And I've no idea how many hundreds of courses for the past 30 years, and read books, and like really worked. Really, actually, it's like Michelangelo and the sculpture of David. Like, I really took away what wasn't me. It's kind of sometimes it's unbelievable because people want me to tell my story sometimes. And when I look how I feel right now, I'm exactly the opposite. Like, I see only light. I see only light in myself, in other people. I'm incredibly inspired. Life seems easy. And I love what's happening. I love every second of my life. And I've transformed the lives of hundreds, probably thousands of people, and I own it. And it wasn't, like it takes something. It takes something every day because we live in a world that is pretty dark right now, and a lot of people can't really be with it. And I had to learn to be with the darkness. And my experience is that like when I could be with the darkness inside of me, it was much easier to be with the darkness out there. And instead of
Say
making it
that part
wrong,
again. When you did what with the darkness inside of you?
when I could be with the darkness inside of me
Okay.
without making it wrong, without thinking that there is something wrong with me that I need to fix, I could be with the darkness outside of me. It was like, okay, so yes, I don't like the way the world looks, but I can fight it, and I can be in a different way. Like Gandhi says, Mahatma Gandhi says, be the change you want to see in the world. And kind of that's what I took on. That's if I want the world to work better, it starts with me.
Wow, so that's amazing. So how, I know you said you
Know
read books and you did a lot of
what
stuff. How did you access the light? Like, how did that, because I know sometimes my head is going too crazy that I can't get still enough. It seems like I can't get still enough to feel the light or to get the light. Like, how do you do that?
That's what I had to learn. You know, like I was kind of, my body was, and I'm very, you know, I'm from Bulgaria, so we move a lot. You know, me, like that's how we are in that part of the world. So I had to actually learn to, you know, be quiet. And I had, I mean, I came up to the stage when I was meditating for 2 hours, and I had to train my body to not do anything for 2 hours, and it was hard. Like, you know, because my body's like, okay, let's do this, let's go that, and let's go. And I was like, no, we are sitting here. I'm sitting here. I'm meditating for 2 hours. Like, there is no way you can distract me from this. And you know, I also like I believe in practice, very easy things to use, like techniques or like something that tools that are easy for me to use. So I started working with the light. So I started like surrounding myself with the light. And right now, one of the best things for me is like, you know, if when I'm this unbalanced, I just go into a loo or like I see a mirror in front of me, I look in my eyes and I say, Maria, I love you. You've got this light. And that's it. Like, you know, I don't have to meditate for 2 hours. But that's kind of, I came here and I had to, I did a lot of you know, like disciplining myself work. I have a brown belt in karate, and that was kind of the martial arts really supported me into working with my energy and directing it in the right way, which I'm very grateful for too. So it was about like dancing also helped me to kind of get into my body and be present. Okay, be present. What's happening with me? Not being out there. And that also helped.
And what
But
kind of
basically,
dance? Was it still Billie Jean?
no. Any kind, like right now it's very like spontaneous. We all love dancing, like very like spontaneous dancing. I did a lot of dynamic meditation and also like dancing, like moving is part of it. A lot of like any kind of release stuff, yoga, of course. So kind of I tried everything under the sun. And right now I'm doing things that really like getting me into my power very quickly because I don't want to lose time. I'm very effective. I believe in being effective. So, and but also like, you know, just I think when I started seeing the light inside of me and I started to actually kind of sponsoring that, investing in it, like, you know, Maria, I love you. And it was hard. Like the first time, you know, I did Louise Hay thing, the ritual with the 21 days of like saying affirmations to yourself in the mirror. And I remember like when I, the first time I looked myself in the mirror and I say like, Maria, I love you. I couldn't hear it. The only thing I heard like, yeah, sure. Who do you think you are? You know, you don't love yourself. You don't, it's like, you're not worthy. Who are you kidding? Do you really believe to, you're a liar. You're a fraud. Who are you talking to? And I'm like, you know, that's what I could hear. What do you mean? I love myself. I didn't love myself. So it was a process, and it's like, you know, 2 months down the road, I look in my eyes and I say to myself, I love you. And I started crying and I knew, okay, now we're there. But it took something, like, you know, those like doing that every day and like being committed to myself for every, like I've never been like that and I needed that. And I think a lot of us kind of jump from one thing to another instead of like remembering that, like, you know, it's the small things, it's the everyday things. How am I with myself right now? How am I with myself tomorrow and the next day? Instead of like, oh, I'm gonna do this huge thing and it's gonna change everything. Well, it does for a while, very short while, but it's like what happens afterwards. Then I'm getting back to myself and how I'm treating myself usually. And I had to learn to treat myself better day after day and just become one, like, you know, millimeter better than I was yesterday, but better than yesterday. And you know, that's how it happened. And it's easy. Like I work in I work as a transformational coach. I also work in a hospice with people who are have terminal diseases and are dying. And it's been, that has been really teaching me to be with the light in people. Because like, you know, at the end of life, you don't remember how much money you had and, you know, like all these apartments and the cars you've driven and everything. But what you remember is, you know, who you are and like that light is there. Now when I can be with the light inside of me, it's the same thing, but on the other side, I can view the light inside of me. I can see the light out there. And like, you know, I can see the light in people who nobody else sees the light into. So I have all these like very magical meetings in the underground with people like, you know, who would never, nobody would talk to. And I have these fantastic conversations, like, you know, with people who are drunk or like somebody else who is considered not the right person because I see the light in people. And that's who I want to communicate with, the light in this world. There is far too much darkness. So.
Wow. Woo. I mean, I'm like, how? But okay, we'll get there. I don't know if you can tell us, but okay. So I know you like moved to Sweden and stuff like that. So let's just go back. I know you were studying psychology. Then you did the courses. When did you move? When did you go to Sweden? Like, when was that? Did you have jobs before you went? And
My
what
life in
was
Bulgaria was great. And then I'm meeting this Swedish guy. And I was his tour guide in Bulgaria. So we were going to like, Bulgaria is an amazingly beautiful country. So, like, I loved showing people around. So I'm showing around this guy who was from Sweden. And on the last day of his visit, he looks at me, he gets very quiet. And he was like, you know, this huge Viking. And I'm very small. So he got very quiet on the last day, didn't speak to me a lot. And I was wondering what's happening. And I'm like, why is he not talking to me? What happened? And then at some point he looks at me, like he comes like this. He looks at me, he says, like, Maria, I need to tell you, I'm in love with you. And I'm like, it was so funny because I had just decided before he came that no more men for me. I'm done with relationships for a while. And like, I was so surprised, I didn't know what to say for a while. Took some months. Anyway, so we started talking to each other. So I moved to Sweden because of him. That's my
And
ex-husband.
how old were you? How old were you?
Well, let's see, I was 25. So, yes, after that period, a lot of crying. That's what started happening. Like, kind of the world started opening up to me in a totally different way. And, you know, that was like he was sponsor he sponsored my first visit to the States. That was 98. I did an amazing course in Santa Monica, and kind of like a totally new life opened up for me, because in like in the States you're used to move from a state to a state. In Europe we move from a country to a country, and it can look like these countries are the same, but they are not. So like you move from a like you know from something you really know well to a totally different way of communicating, of being, of like people relating to each other. And I love Sweden, and I kind of felt at home. I think I was in love first with Sweden, then with my boyfriend, by the way, but that's another story. And
So
it's I yes.
did you just come and move in with him?
Well, I had to, like, I didn't know anybody in Sweden, I didn't know Swedish, so like, you know, he was my person. And also was kind of the first time when I was so dependent on like on a single person. Like in Bulgaria we live together like many generations, so like I've never been alone in Bulgaria. And like here I'm coming to this country and like people are like, when you get to know them, they're great, but there is a distancing that doesn't exist in Bulgaria. So like for me it was like, oh, where did I come, like where have I landed here? And you know, like I was kind of he was my the connection to life here. And it was really hard, like for me it was really hard, because suddenly like I felt totally alone. My family's still in Bulgaria, so like I'm on my own here, and I had to start from the beginning and build a new life, because everything that I had done in Bulgaria kind of didn't count. And it didn't, like it's a totally different culture, like you know people expectations are totally different. So I started again from the beginning, and you know, again, doing courses and learning the language. I learned Swedish for, I think it took me 6 months. Kind of, I was so used to studying languages, so like you know, for me it's like learning language was like nothing. Okay, let's just learn Swedish. And the good thing with the Swedish is like when you know Swedish, then you know Norwegian, then you understand, you know, Danish, and like kind of you get a lot of things in the package. And I really like, I love Sweden. It's an amazing country to visit. So yeah, I'm of course tour guide in Sweden. I know a lot about Swedish history, and I love it. It's kind of that's one of my favorite things to do.
So you moved there with him. How long were you with him? Did you stay with him for a long time?
9, 12 years.
Wow. Okay. Did you
He
ever
is a
get
very
married or anything? Did you get
No,
married? No.
don't get married in Sweden. it's, I think we have like the country in the world with the most single households. Like in the big cities, they're like 50%, and that's normal here. So usually like fewer and fewer people get married, and people still like people love relationships. They just then it's like it looks different.
Okay.
Yes.
So what did you start doing? You had studied psychology, and then what did you end up doing, like, for work, or did you not have to work?
Not in the beginning. I didn't know the language, and it's hard
Yeah.
to actually find work here without knowing the language. But in like in time, actually, I started doing different kind of courses, landmark education courses. So like I did form, then I did bus course, and like 2 years down the road, somebody asked me to become to work on staff, and that's what I took on, and it's one of the best things I've done with my life. So
Oh.
suddenly, like I became this, you know, like I became this hub of transformation in Stockholm, and it was an exciting place to be. And also, I had to confront things that I hadn't seen up until now. Like for example, when people didn't do what I wanted them to do, I became a bitch. I didn't know that about myself. And like you know, and now I have fun with it. And now actually, sometimes I'm using it. It's not like I don't become a bitch again, but like I can use this because people don't know if I, you know, if I do that for real. And sometimes it works, but like
Yeah.
up until that, I didn't even know that. Like you know, I was really nasty, and that was a very good
Wow.
thing to see because like you know, it was a great space to you know look at yourself and all the darkness that I hadn't seen by then. But it was an amazing experience, and I worked with the, you know, the most fabulous people on the planet. It's like it was such a privilege to actually stand for transformation, and it wasn't easy, especially the end, because there was this huge, like, cult conversation in Europe. A lot of the offices, landmark offices, had to close down. Sweden's office was one of them, and very, like, you know, I had to go through days when every second call I had, somebody called the office, and every second call I had was like, "Oh, you work for that sect? What are you doing? Brainwashing people? Aren't you ashamed?" And like, you know, first time you get that call, you're like, "What?" Because you know, I've done those courses, I still do them. It's an education. It has nothing to do with codes, and those people couldn't get it. So the first time, like, you know, you get shocked, like, what? Am I brainwashing people? And then I just, like, I had to remember, like, wait a second. So I started asking them, have you done our courses? And of course, the answer was no. And I'm like, there is nothing for us to discuss. You know, have a great life. And it, like, the whole society was against us because, like, you know, we were on the first pages of the biggest newspapers in Sweden, and like, all this, like, this cult and those people are doing horrible things. And you know, like standing for something that's good against everybody else took something, but also like taught me like, oh, people, human beings are have amazing strength in us. And that was one of the moments I realized like I can stand for something, though nobody else actually believes in it, or like people have totally different experience of it.
Wow.
And I was that was a great thing to experience.
Wow. All right. We're going to quickly take our commercial break and then we're going to come right back and see what you're up to now. All right. So here's a word from our sponsor.
Has social emotional learning become just one more thing on your teachers' plates? Do teachers and students both find it boring and ineffective? Then bring Kikori to your school. Kikori transforms classrooms through experiential SEL activities that help students play, reflect, connect, and grow. Even better, students say it's more fun than recess. Schedule a no obligation conversation at kikoriapp.com/bringkikori. KIKORI.
Do you ever feel like you can't say what you really want to say? Or that you're stuck or in a holding pattern in your relationships, career, personal life, or finances? Are there things you want in life that you've given up on? Are you resigned that this is as good as it's going to get? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then Hillary Burns, host of the Getting Real with Hillary Show, has the solution you need.
Hillary is a published author of 3 books and has a program called The Getting Real Process. This process frees you from what is holding you back, allowing you to create a life you love. Don't believe it? It is hard to believe that it could work, isn't it? The proof is that hundreds of Hillary's clients have used the Getting Real Process and are now free to create whatever they want in relationships, career, finances, enjoying life, or just loving themselves more. So go to realtalkwithhillary.com and order Hillary's book, Real Talk, and set up a conversation.
Welcome back to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And again, thank you as always to our sponsor, KokoriApp.com. If you want to bring experiential social emotional learning to your schools or business, please go to KokoriApp.com and schedule a consultation. And as always, if you're not speaking up, if you don't feel free to say what you need to say, give me a call, reach out. You can email me at Hillary@GettingRealWithHillary.com. Hillary's with one L. And please, let's talk and let's get you free and creating a life you love. All right. I'm just going to bring back Maria and I'm going to let her say her last name so I don't butcher it again. Welcome back. So how many years were you on staff before they closed the office?
I was 2 years on staff, a bit more is the last 2 years. So kind of literally, I was the one who closed down the center. I had the, you know, the keys in my hand.
So how long ago was that? Was that a long time ago?
And that was 20 years ago, exactly 20 years ago.
So you were still with the guy, right? And then what did you start doing then?
I was starting teaching myself, or like actually I went to college to teach myself how to do movies. You know, movies are one of my passions. I've always wanted to make movies. So like that was the next step. So of course, something totally different. And like, you know, of course, it was also about taking risks and everything. So I started training myself in doing movies. The movie that I finished the college with was nominated at the Stockholm Film Festival, which was a huge thing at the time. You know, like I was going to press conferences and like I was surrounded by all these stars, movie stars.
What was the movie about? What was the movie on?
The movie was about a guy who, you know, talking about Sweden and people being isolated, which was kind of the normal idea about Swedish people, which they are not at all isolated in that way. But anyway, so it was about the guy who decided to kind of, it was, you know, I don't know, the brother Mark's direction, but he was hurting himself, not too much, but like a bit, so he could get into a hospital so people could take care of him. And like, you know, he was longing for the like human connection, and that was his way. Like that's what he would do. Like he thought, like, okay, if I hurt myself not too much but enough, I'm gonna get into a hospital and people are gonna take care of me, and then I'll be part of something. It was like the guy who actually shot the movie was an amazing cameraman. So like, it's like the movie was amazing. And,
Did you write it? Was it true?
I wrote it, I produced it, and I directed it. And as I like, you know, it was funny because up until that time I was like, oh, I'm a boring person. And then as a producer, you have to entertain people while everything else, you know, gets right. And all the lights are in place and everything. So like, I'm starting noticing that people are laughing. Like I'm saying something, people are laughing. And at some point, like, oh, you know, maybe I'm not as boring as I thought. And it's like, oh, these small discoveries, like, you know, we take for granted how many things we believe about ourselves that are not true. And we never actually consider them, you know, afterwards, like, wait a second, am I really that person I believe I am? And that's kind of, I've become masterful at that, like distinguishing the person I thought I was that I'm not. And that's what I'm helping also my clients with. Because like I can see their true selves that they can't see yet. So.
Yeah. So, okay. So you made the movie. It got awards, of course, because that's what you do. And then what? And then what?
I got into all of this making movie, like videos with like educational training, like trainings, and I did a lot of stuff. And Something started happening that kind of shifted my idea about making movies the way I wanted to do it. Like I started meeting people who I didn't want to be around. A lot of people who weren't, as big of stars as they thought, but like they pretended to be big stars. And I believe in authenticity, and that was far too much like falseness that I couldn't stand. And I just at some point realized that okay, either I'm gonna kind of sell my soul and stay here, or I'm gonna do something else. And I decided to do something else. So as a psychologist, I've always actually wanted to contribute to people, but like healing all of them, not only like their thoughts or like certain parts of them. So I started working with people who had terminal diseases, kind of that's one of the things I'm still doing it. I see it more much more like as a vocation than a profession, and really supporting people in being complete at the end of their lives. Which kind of means a lot because they can't be complete if their families are not complete. And in Sweden, the same as in the Western world, we don't talk about that until we have to. And kind of a lot of people are still unprepared, though their parents are very getting old, they're still unprepared when something bad happens. And kind of being like learning to be around them and be with them and empowering them where they are. And supporting like the whole family being complete, that has become one of my passions, and that's still something I do gladly, because I know that people who are complete pass over to the other side much easily. And I've seen also like a lot of people who weren't, and how hard it was for them to let go of life. And like I've seen horrible things, and we deserve better as human beings. So that's one of my ambitions. I really want to empower people around that and dying.
Wow. And who do you work for? Who do you work
It's
for? Do they pay you?
yes, they do. It's in between like nursery home and hospice. I'm not sure how to define it, but like it's in between. And also like the same as everywhere, but like people got sent to a place. It's like a hospital. Like people get sent to a place like that by the state in Sweden. And right now the state waits as long as possible to send those people because, as you can imagine, it costs a lot of money. So the people who we get at my workplace are like in like worse and worse shape. So it's we're becoming more and more hospital, like hospice. So yes,
Wow.
it's been
And
such
what
a
is
privilege.
it called? What is your position called?
Well, it's like I'm kind of a sub nurse. I'm not a nurse. I don't give medicine. I don't believe in medicine in general. But like and they use my psychology. I can use it as knowledge. And also like I've been a part of a spiritual movement in America, and there I'm a minister. So like I've been using that part to actually supporting people spiritually. Because by the end of life, people are like totally different things are like important to them. So spirituality becomes a huge part in who people are and what's important to them.
Okay. So, all right. So you're working with those people, and then you're all, so tell me about the, you're a minister? Wait, so what did you just throw in there?
A minister. And movement of spiritual inner awareness, which has its let's see here, what is it? It's
That's the
center.
name of it? M
Yes,
movement of spiritual awareness. Okay.
NMSA, which has like the starting point is LA, which I've been to a couple of times. So yes, as a minister, so like I can be there with people when they get born, when they wed, or like actually, and when they pass over to the other side, and kind of I've been using that also as an experience and as knowledge and as expertise. As I said, like my intention is really to support people to get empowered in any possible way, and I use everything I've got.
So say that again, to be empowered to slip away. So
yeah,
when they
so like
die.
ready when they're ready, they can do that, and when you're complete, you can do that much more easily. And like, it's interesting because sometimes people need permission. So very often, like when some of my patients is really like in a bad state and like their time is coming, so all their relatives are there and like, you know, everybody knows like it's coming. They kind of need, like, usually I come into the room, I get like, I touch them slightly and it's almost like, you know, I give them permission to go and they go. And it's been really interesting. Like it's to, I do see the souls as part, you know, like part of that world. And it's like, I know it can sound really weird, but I see that part in us, like the eternal part in us. And kind of I've always had a way to communicate with them. And that's one of the things I'm doing at the end. So the
soul, so you see it before they pass or after?
Before and after, and I've had like amazing, amazing, very strange old experiences. Like when, because my colleagues kind of know that I'm odd. So when, you know, when something happens and the body of somebody who has deceased is still in our hospital, like in Sweden, there are like laws and they can't stay for too long and everything. If the body is still there, my colleagues kind of call me because they know that maybe there is something happening. So what I usually do is like I go to that place and like I feel the energy sometimes, like the like, because the soul is still there, still very connected to the body, so it can't get up, can't get home. So I clear the karma, like I clear the aura, I connect the soul with whoever is gonna meet it over there on the other side, and you know, I let it go, and then it's quiet. There is peace, and like you wouldn't even know that, you know, like a second before that, like the energy was going in this. So it's one of my ways to contribute to the world.
Wow. So not everybody where you work has that, right? They're just doing the normal thing, and then you have this other gift.
Yes.
No, that's amazing, right? That you have that. That's really cool. That's really quite a gift. But I wonder, I feel bad for the people who don't get it, you know, who have to.
No, I know, but it's like, I do believe that we are all connected. And, you know, if I can do it with somebody, I can imagine that I do it with many other people who can't, who, as you say, can't be there. But it's like, because as you can imagine, like right now, there are tons of people who are passing to the other side. Like we're so many on this planet, and tons of like babies and like spirits who are coming back here. So like, I kind of imagine that I do that for everybody. Like I send home all of those souls who are going in that moment, not only the person who is in front of me. And even when I'm coaching, like, you know, I'm not coaching only the person in front of me. I'm coaching like his whole family or her whole family. They don't know about it. But like, that's how I'm thinking, because I know that if I transform something, everybody around me will benefit. And then everybody around them is going to benefit. So like, I see all the ripples. I don't see like, oh, I'm working with this one person. I see like, oh, I'm transforming the whole network of their conversations. Like I'm transforming everybody else. And people won't know, but that's not what I'm after. So I'm after healing.
Yeah, I love that. Okay. So we have a few minutes to talk about your transformational coaching. And then we'll close up the interview. But this has been fantastic. So you do the work with the, you know, people, you know, the hospice kind of thing. I know you do tour guides too. You still give tour guides, and now you also have other kind of clients. So if someone like who would work with you? How do we get them connected to you?
So yes, so I work with people who are in some kind of let's see here, how can I explain it best possible, like, you know, in between changes, or like something shocking, big, whatever has happened. Like a lot of my clients have, you know, just received a cancer diagnosis, and they call me because they know that, you know, I don't see cancer the way most people do. I don't see it like as a doom or like, oh, now I'm going to die. I see it like, oh, you've got this experience. You know, let's work through it. So all of my clients who have actually cancer, they've healed themselves. And part of it is because I listen to them like they're already healed. And, you know, it gets to them. So
wow.
I work with a lot of people who want to complete their past. What does it mean? Heal whatever is there in the past that is preventing them from being there, from fully being themselves, like creating the lives they want and like being fully empowered. I'm really good at seeing things that are not complete, things that needs to be said, things that needs to be let go of. Completion is one of my passion, and you know, because I've completed so much around my own life, and I've become really good at it. So I want to share that with and guide people to become very good at that too. One of the reasons I believe there are so many conflict in the world is because there is so much trauma that's not complete. And one of the things I'm doing on the spiritual, like one of my contributions, the way I see that, like I experience the pain in the world right now. And I can't do that for a long time because the pain, as you can imagine, it's like so much pain out there and so much suffering. Mm-hmm. But I do know that if we don't experience the pain from the past, it's there. It stays in our bodies. It stays in our minds, stays in the world around us. And we can't move like forward. We can't go anywhere because it's there and it stops anything. And I really want to empower people and actually completing those things so they can actually move forward and create amazing life.
Wow. So how would people, do you do it virtually so people can do it anywhere in the world with you?
Absolutely. You do it virtually. Like people, very, a lot of my clients actually talk to me on the phone. So,
and how would they find you? What's the best way for them to find you?
Definitely my email. I'm also, as my name, they can see my name. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Facebook. It's very actually easy to find me.
Okay. So yeah. I will say it for the people listening. It's Maria, M-A-R-I-A, and then Z, as in zebra, A-H-A-R-I-E, V as in Victor, A. So say it. Maria, say your last name.
Zakharieva. Maria Zakharieva.
Maria Zakharieva. Okay, good. That was better, right?
Very good.
Okay, so you can find her everywhere under her name. If you would like to reach out to her, please do. I know she's very powerful and, you know, have you complete the past so you can move forward powerfully. And the more people that complete, the higher the energy goes of the world, right?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So, Maria, what would you like to leave people with? Like, how do you see the world? I know you're doing a lot with the pain. You work with people to, you know, transition. What would be your vision, do you think?
My vision of the world is that actually we all get that we are in the same boat and we can't just save certain people. Like a lot of rich people think they can save only themselves. We can't save certain people. Either we all get saved together or nobody gets saved. And I really like, I do believe that we are here to contribute to each other. And I believe in a world where actually people do that. And people like the world can work for everybody when we heal whatever we need to heal. And we start seeing each other as, you know, as brothers and sisters as we are. Because like if something happens to you, it happens to me. Maybe not right now, but down the road, because we're all connected. And I do believe in that there is an amazing opportunity and possibility right now to create actually a world where we are there for each other, not against each other. We've done that so long. We are masterful with againstness. Let's become masterful and forwards for each other.
Say that last part again. We're masters
We're masterful at againstness. Like, you know, if you don't believe like me or like if you don't think what I think, like, you know, I have a right to kill you. Like, what? Let's become masters at forness. I'm for you and you're for me.
And what do you see as the access to doing that? They can work with you. Do you see any other paths for people that would help
actually
move them forward?
Any way of healing whatever they need to heal? And people do that in, you know, like many different ways. Like there's so many modalities that they can use, but like, you know, from yoga to therapy, like whatever works for you, find something, heal whatever needs to be healed, you know, complete the past and get present to how amazing you are and how much more possibilities there are in the world to create a world that's beautiful and loving and, you know, opens up new possibilities for everybody.
Wow. And what, because we just have a little bit of time left. When you were, this is a question for me. When you were searching for the light, what do you think made the biggest difference for you in finding it? The 2-hour meditation or else?
What a good question. 2 hours meditation is pretty advanced.
Yeah.
But actually, I do believe that it was when I started getting present to myself in the mirror. Like, okay. The mirror work is an amazing thing to do, because when you look in your eyes, you can't lie to yourself. And that's a great way to actually getting present to whatever, you know, whatever's not complete. The demons we have inside, the darkness we have inside, the things that we can't be with. Because the moment you know about them, you can do something about them. If you don't know anything about them, how are you going to heal anything? So that was like probably the biggest thing, most important thing I've done.
Great. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I just love your message. I love, you know, what you went through to get to where you are is incredible, but bringing the light, I know you bring it everywhere and not just to the people in front of you, but to the entire world. So just thank you. Thank you for being that for the world.
Thank you, Hilary, for inviting me. It's been a privilege. Thank you so much.
You're
and welcome. Thank you to all of you who have been listening. You could have done many other things with your life right now. So thank you for being here.
Thank you all. All right.
Thank you for watching this episode. I started getting real with Hilary when I discovered that I was a people-pleasing, pleasant phony, and wanted to be more of my real self. We can grow together. If you will like the show, subscribe to my channel, and share this episode with your friends and family so that we can have a world that's more real.